What's going on, people? Welcome to Paint Points. As usual, I'm your host, Jake Painting. This podcast is proudly brought to you by the SB Nation Podcast Network and the Chainus Hoopers family. Coming to you moments after a heart-wrenching loss to the Denver Nuggets. 93-91, I think, in the end. I don't have that in front of me, but it was a painful one. Not a good showing from the quote-unquote big three. Another good defensive showing. I am here with Tyler Metcalf, Canis Hoopers contributor, hashtag basketball, and No Ceilings, the new draft website and new draft Twitter account, which is really good. Tell me, before we get into the game, just give me a little rundown on No Ceilings, because I haven't spoke to you about it, and I'm excited to kind of hear what your perspective is on it, since you're kind of at the center of it.
Yeah. So I guess you could kind of say that we took a lead from you and are trying to form our own thing over on Substack. And it's me and a couple guys that I'm sure fans will recognize from Draft Twitter. And we're just trying to do something cool and interesting and creative and informative in the draft world that we don't really think is out there right now, at least on a really consistent year-long basis. So, and there's like a group of like six or seven of us. So the goal is to kind of be cranking out content constantly, 3, 4, 5 times a week. And we started with conference previews this last week. We'll have more stuff going this week, and just really excited to kind of get into the season and really dive as deep as humanly possible into this upcoming draft class with a ton of written work. And then as we continue to find our voice and our audience, we'll continue to really dive into video breakdowns and podcasts and stuff like that. So looking to expand out into a bunch of mediums and with a group of some really, really smart people. Definitely go check out No Ceilings on Substack and Twitter. We'll have some really great stuff throughout the season that I'm really confident and excited about.
Yeah, I'm excited for it as well. If you listen, you know that both of us really love our draft stuff, and you're much better at it than me, and the guys that are doing it over there are really, really smart people when it comes to the draft. So yeah, go check that out. Hopefully we don't have to worry too much about the top of the draft this season as Minnesota fans. I know that it kind of doesn't feel that way right now. Turning our attention back to the game, let's start with the negatives, because it was a loss and we can get them out the way and then kind of speak on some positives. The first thing, I guess, that stands out and has surprisingly stood out all season is the half-court offense. Pretty bad tonight. What is it like? Do you have an idea of what is going wrong, or is it just missing shots? Like where are you at with it?
So I think some of it is just missing shots currently. But I mean, like, Towns went a good stretch in the middle of the game from where he didn't have a field goal attempt from like the first end of the first quarter to like the middle of the third, which is inexcusable. I know he sat a decent amount of that time, but still, he's one of the best offensive players in the league. You got to find him shots. Anthony Edwards he was, at least tonight, more of that ant we saw in 3/4 of that second Pelicans game, where he's just kind of disappearing on offense and settling for jumpers and not finishing at the rim. The Timberwolves missed a ton of layups tonight again. I think Jaden McDaniels has been brilliant defensively this year yet again. His shot is just not falling at all. And then he's 1 for 7 again tonight, and that's been a really common theme. And then turnovers, just guys not ready to catch the ball, passes being a foot out in front of guys not paying attention when that ball swings back towards them. They're turning the ball over at a pretty unsustainable rate at this point.
It seems clunky, man. Like, if Cat Edwards and Russell don't have it, you're not going to win. But even if one of those guys don't have it, it kind of feels like there's just not enough offense. Like if McDaniels can't hit his threes, it was 0-4 tonight again. Malik Beasley obviously had a really good game, but they, I think Finch is struggling a little bit with himself of when to play Beasley and when to sit him. And then you have like you have Pat Beverley, Josh Okogie, Naz Reid, Taurean Prince seems lost in the offense at the moment, and Vando as well. It's almost it's strange because before the season it hasn't been much of the season, and it's still a small sample size. But now that you look at the roster, it almost makes sense that they're playing better defense than offense because like there's so many defenders on the team and they're playing really well and the bench is playing really well, but the offense is really, really reliant on all those three guys, Towns, Russell, and Edwards, playing well. I thought all three of them were bad tonight. Edwards obviously had a really poor game. I think he settled too much, and I think even worse than him settling is he kind of seemed snake-bit at the end of the game just to take a shot in general. There was that one play where they kind of swung it to him and he had a open mid-range jumper, which I would expect him to take, even if it's not a shot that I love. And he ended up driving and turning it over. The last play of the game, we were just talking about it before we got on air. That's just one of those plays. The shot clock goes off and almost fires from half court, so he has to pass. I think if the shot clock doesn't go off, he probably drives himself and has a step on Barton as well. I don't know. I think Finch is still running really nice actions. But it seems like it's hard when they're almost playing 3-on-5 offensively at all times and Jaden can't hit a shot. So they got to figure it out, man. There's something... I'm getting flamed right now on Twitter because I criticized D'Angelo Russell, but I don't think he was the worst of the three tonight, but I think he is the reason why it seems to not work as much because he has the ball in his hands so often. And he calls his own number so often and makes careless plays and kind of does things like that. I think that he's obviously better than what he's playing right now. But I don't know, that dynamic of those three just doesn't seem to be clicking at all.
Yeah, so I disagree with you a little bit on Russell. But he really seems to be forcing the playmaking aspect of his game this season. And... I think they're really still trying to work out that balance between those three guys, and a lot of his turnovers seem to be stemming from him overpassing and trying to, you know, make that extra pass when he just has a 10-foot floater that he could throw up or an open three that he could knock down. And I think he's kind of, it really looks like he's in his own head a lot of the time about that because... And in the long run, I think that's a little more encouraging because you can tell that he wants the offense to flow and that he's really buying in and wants to play this role and wants to get guys involved and doesn't want to just have the stigma hanging over him of being just like this ball dominant shooting guy. But he has yet to really find that balance, and it's resulting in a lot of his turnovers, which I think are pretty avoidable. But yeah, and just it seemed like tonight there were a lot of really good cuts and guys just dropping the ball too. And that's just a symptom of just not being ready or anticipating it, which I don't get because this isn't the first season a lot of these guys are playing with Cat, and he'll deliver these weird shovel passes or over the shoulder passes. And the fact that they're not ready for him, really surprises me. McDaniels had one down the stretch and cut from the weak side, and he couldn't scoop up a ball either. But that aspect is just really strange to me that they're not really clicking on that end, and it seems like they're almost trying not to step on each other's toes too much.
Yeah, it's a good point about D'Lo is that I don't think it's him in general that he can't play with these guys. I think that he's just, like you said, caught in two minds of whether he should be himself, which is a score first guy who can make good plays for others, or if he should be the guy who makes plays for others all the time. And it feels like he's making the wrong decision more often than not, but like you said, in almost in an encouraging way, because you want him to have those things in mind. You want him to have Kat and D'Lo in mind, Kat and Ant, sorry, in mind. But right now, it just feels like when he should shoot, he's passing, and when he should pass, he shoots. And when the shot is dropping, it works better, not just because of the obvious that he shot that the shot is dropping, but because I think then he starts to make the decisions quicker, and he knows when he can shoot, he's going to hit that shot, and he doesn't overthink it. And then Towns has been really good so far this season. I think aside from some of the early kind of mental
that Pelicans.
Yeah, the mental demons that I guess he was battling with the refs. He's been really good the last two games with the refs, but tonight he just seemed like he couldn't get going. All three of them couldn't get going, and they're not going to win games like that. And the positive of that, I guess, is that like they were still in this game against Denver and against a Jokic that was playing really well. The defense kept them in it. Is there another thing that stood out to me to you tonight? Sorry, that was a true negative.
I don't think so. I mean, Taurean Prince was pretty disappointing, and I mean that showed with only getting 8 minutes tonight. Some of the lineups that Finch was running out in the third quarter, I thought were really puzzling. But I think a lot of that had to do with McDaniels and Vanderbilt getting in foul trouble or kind of foul trouble there. But there were some of those like deep bench lineups where it's like there isn't a single person out here who can create a foot of space if they need to.
Exactly.
But I think that was a symptom more of guys getting in foul trouble and the regular rotation and just needing to put someone in for a few minutes. But I mean, when you hold Denver to 24% from three and they only lost the rebounding battle by one, that's just a pretty inexcusable loss, especially with Jokic, who's not apparently 100%, although he looked fine tonight. But I mean, like, they did a great job on Michael Porter, who was 3 of 14, and they did an awesome job of running guys off the 3-point line. The defense looked good. It's just the half court offense and the transition defense in the first half too was pretty appalling. There were multiple 4-on-1 breaks, and Denver just missed an open corner three. And if that doesn't get corrected going forward, then I think they could be in some serious trouble, because we saw that all last year too.
Yeah, you need guys who can create shots, man. Like that's, you know, if we're going back to talking about draft talk, that's one of the things that you look for in these star caliber players, is guys who can create their own shot, and they have three of them on the roster. Like, yeah. I don't know if that's enough. And it's so strange, because we came in thinking that the offense is going to be really good and the defense wasn't. And yeah, like I said before, now it kind of seems obvious that with those three guys, you're going to have nights that you really struggle in the half court, because you don't have enough guys who can create. And like you said, then you end up with lineups in the third quarter that have no one who can create for themselves. And you can win those minutes through defense and through cutting and through good actions from Finch to get open looks for spot-up shooters, but it doesn't always work like that. You need a guy who can do it themselves, and Denver have those guys, and they couldn't do it either. I think tonight was one of the few, like, Minnesota have held almost every team to poor shooting nights from deep, but this was the first one where I thought, like, they genuinely just didn't give open shots all night. I think there's other games, the Pelicans game and the what game am I trying to think of? I'm losing track of my mind. Who did they play last game?
Milwaukee.
Yeah, I knew that. I've literally wrote about it and watched the game three times. Milwaukee had open shots all night, and yeah, they missed them. I think Denver tonight, they contested everything, and they, like you said, they ran them off the line a lot, and like, that's super encouraging, but you need to be able to score over 100 points at the other end, point blank. You can't, if you can hold a team to 93 points, that's awesome, but you need to be able to score 110 points to be a good team in the NBA. moving on, we'll move on to some positives because that's what we're all here for. We want to forget that the Timberwolves just lost the heartbreaker. I'm going to start with Patrick Beverley and Josh Okogie on the court at the same time is my favorite thing at the moment. I know J.O. didn't play last game, but like that, the bench lineups tonight were so awesome defensively. Yeah. And like, yeah, they don't create space for themselves, but like Pat Bev, Josh Okogie, and then when Naz Reid didn't kind of be the tent pole of that offense, that's a fun trio, man. And then you got Malik out there hitting shots, which was nice to see. But yeah, I think the Pat Beverley, Josh Okogie, Jared Vanderbilt trio of guys who can play as the low man and at the point of attack, that's what's keeping the defense afloat. And then you have obviously McDaniels in the starting lineup, who does a little bit of everything as well. But yeah, I really want to make note, and I think when I was writing my notes, I wrote about four different times that whenever J.O. and Pat Bev are on the court together, the Timberwolves are good, and it's been that way all season.
Yeah, and I generally hate single game plus minus when people try and make outlandish points with it. But
well, that's what I'm getting flamed with right now about D'Angelo Russell, because he was a +10 in the game,
But to further your point, Okogie +18, Naz Reid +15, Pat Bev +10, and that they were really good tonight, and they kind of have been all season, which is really encouraging going forward. And the fact that the Timberwolves were able to turn Wancho and Culver into Pepev is pretty absurd. The more you think about it, and the immediate impact that we see Beverley having on this team with their mindset, the way he's chirping at guys and holding people accountable. And I think it's at the end of the third quarter where the ball got kicked out to Okogie, and he like shot faked it like a couple times and tried to do like a jab step to throw the defender off, and then chucked up an air ball three, and Pat Bev starts gyrating these shot fake motions, and I'm like, what the hell are you doing? Just shoot the damn ball. Yeah. And I think that stuff is really good and something that this team was really missing from a more, you know, on the court aspect. The way he avoid screens is just beautiful. I know you wrote about that during the off season, and that was a really fun piece, and just seeing it immediately translate, and it just takes so much pressure off the rest of the defense because they don't have to over worry on helping and recovering, and they can stay a little tighter on their man because that having to tag that roller and then recover or scramble, just the likelihood and frequency of the rest of the team having to do that is just completely minimized because Beverley is so infrequently out of position as the point of attack defender.
Yeah. And it's the foundation of that whole defensive system, because then Towns or Naz can show and recover quicker. Mm-hmm. You don't have to have Towns out there doubling the ball handler pretty much, or kind of trapping the ball handler to wait for a Russell or a Malik Beasley or even an Anthony Edwards to get back into play. And it's just the little things. Like, it's the things that you can't even explain. There was one tonight where they swung the ball around the horn, and he got a finger. He kind of like swiped down on a shooter before they went up for the shot, and it was in a moment where Denver had the momentum as well, and he swiped down on the ball and got the steal before, I think it might have been Michael Porter Jr., as he brought the ball back down to shoot. Like, it's just those tiny things that, like, I guess that is in the box score as a steal, but all night he does these little things that are just ridiculous, like, and over again. How long can he play 22 minutes for and not 28? Is he capable of playing 28 or 30, or is his body kind of past that point?
I think he's past that point. Or at least I would continue treating him like he's past that point to ensure that he makes it to the end.
Yeah, well, you'd rather 22 minutes a night than 30 minutes for 40 games.
Exactly. And he's just one of those guys that doesn't play all 82 games because he always gets hurt because of the way he plays. And, you know, it's a give and take with that. And if he's out there for 2 minutes or 30, the intensity level is going to be the exact same every game. And I really appreciate that about him. And I mean, he's still doing all the annoying stuff that's, you know, that he's always done throughout his career, but that's what's got him to this point. But I think that 20 to 25 minute range is pretty perfect for him, with, you know, a few off nights here and there just to make sure that he's good and can make it to the finish line. Because if he goes down, I think that hurts him pretty significantly, because he's not a negative on offense either, and we've seen that with his 3-point shooting.
I think it's one of those things where you know about a player until you can't, but you don't really know about them until you watch them every game, and you know about the defense. I'm surprised at how well he runs an offense. I don't think he's at, like, he's not D'Angelo Russell. He can't create his own shot, but he really makes the right read a lot. Really good at skip passes to the corner out of pick and roll, and really good at passing to the roll man as well. And that's, they're both things, especially when they had the Towns Nas minutes tonight, which kind of fluctuated between awesome and horrible within about a 4-minute stretch. But when Pat Bev was out there with those guys, and you had them kind of make, he had him making reads out of pick and roll, I was super impressed, and it's not the first time this season that I've been impressed with his passing.
And it's something that we haven't seen him do for the last 2-3 years in LA, because Kawhi and PG have done 90% of the initiating. His entire role there was to shoot off the catch and play defense, and just that the way he has run the pick and roll and set guys up for those corner threes and stuff, it has been really impressive. And another thing defensively is, even when he doesn't avoid the screen, or and the screener drags him off and forces a switch, he doesn't panic. He does such a good job of leveraging his size and getting under the guy and forcing them out, or just holding his own. And it's not that typical, we got the center switched on the point guard, just feed it down, and
they didn't get one Jokic on Beverly post up tonight. And I reckon they switched at least 4 or 5 times. And he just, like you said, holds his own, waits for another screen or something to come, and then quickly kind of gets kicked out of there by Towns or Nas. And that's literally the best thing, the best way you can handle that, because he'll fight and he'll claw and he'll scratch if they do get it down to Jokic. But the best case scenario is that you just don't let them get it there, and you fight hard to get out of there and get out of there safely. And he's so good at that. The other thing with Bev is, I've just kind of finished semi ripping on D'Lo, but that's when D'Lo tonight. That's when D'Lo's at his best. When he's at his best so far, when he's playing with Beverly, and that's the opposite of what you just said with last season and the season before. It's been all about Kawhi and PG and how to get Beverly kind of just playing off the ball and then guarding point guards or small guards on defense. But it's the opposite now, because they want D'Lo off the ball and Pat Bev to do the ball handling. And I think that's when D'Lo's at his best. And I think that's where my frustrations at the moment lie with Russell, because when he's on the court with Ant and Kat, he seems to be more on the ball than when he's on the floor with Pat Bev. And like, I just want D'Lo off the ball all the time. I want him, and that's not a knock on him, because I think he's just really good off the ball.
Yeah,
and I think that he's playmaking. It's not that I want him just to shoot. I want him to catch off. Like, I want him to make plays off the catch and make plays in secondary actions and in broken floor situations. And I think that's where he's at his best. I think when it's top of the key, kind of try and find space for 8 seconds and then get into the paint, and he doesn't want to shoot because he doesn't really like to shoot around the rim and he wants to make a play for others, that's when things get a bit hairy. And I don't know, I love the Beverly and Russell pairing as much as I do the Beverly and Okogie pairing, because I think tonight they were playing like Russell, Beverly, Okogie, Prince and Nas as kind of the core bench unit. Like, they would bring Russell back in with the bench unit, which they've been doing a lot this season, and I really like that. And I think tonight they were in this game because the bench was really holding up its end of the bargain. And then you had Malik in with the starters, and he was getting open looks because of Edwards and Towns and the gravity they suck towards them. So I really like that dynamic. I just think that there's a lot to work out in terms of half-court offense.
Yeah, and the bench held up their end of the bargain. The defense was really good again. I mean, holding Denver to 93 points is a really good night. But when none of Ant, Towns, or Russell can break 14 points, they're not going to win. It's just not going to happen. Unless somehow Malik Beasley goes for 40, which I'm not going to hold my breath on, even though I thought he was excellent tonight. But
he kept them in it multiple times where they really needed a bucket, and Beasley was there. He was the next guy I wanted to bring up. I thought he was awesome tonight, and I think that this was a nice little carrot dangling in front of him that if you can hit your shots, you'll play 27 minutes. Won't play 16, 17 minutes. You'll play 27. You'll get time with the starters. I think he closed the game as well. Oh, he did close the game because he missed that layup at the end, which was awesome. An awesome play from Will Barton.
It was.
As much as I want to say, you know, Malik should have done this, I should have done that, sometimes you just got to tip your cap to a guy who made a fucking awesome defensive play. And somehow managed to be blocking Malik and not have his foot out of bounds all within the space of a millisecond from Barton. That was awesome. So I loved Malik's game tonight, and I loved the way Finch used him. The way Finch has used him all season is really a testament to the way Finch can run plays to get shooters open. He hasn't got the plaudits for it so far because Malik hasn't been able to throw a rock in the ocean. But every single one of those threes came off really good action, and that's if he starts hitting them, that really kind of alleviates some of the pressure on this half-court offense.
Yeah, it really feels like Beasley is much more comfortable running off screens and shooting than just being a spot-up guy. And I feel he's had a handful of stuff, specifically before tonight, specifically run for him. But I haven't looked at the numbers, but it feels like he's been asked to mostly just stand on the corner or the weak side and, you know, relocate accordingly and knock down. Basically stand still, catch and shoot jumpers. And tonight he was constantly run through screens, and he has some of the best shot preparation footwork in the league, and
it's bonkers.
I think it helps him just get in that rhythm. And one of the sets they continuously ran tonight, or ran a couple times for him tonight, was that they set up in Chicago or Miami action, and then they set a stagger screen for him on the baseline, and then
I've been calling it staggered staggers because I don't really know what it is, because he kind of comes off a double pin down, or a Chicago, and then he
goes from one corner, from the weak side corner to the strong side, and if his defender goes over, he settles deeper in the corner. If his defender trails him, he goes up more towards the wing, and he reads that. He has such a good feel for that play specifically and how to get organized in the corner, and he knocked down two just beautiful wide open threes because of how he reorganized his body in the corner. It's so much fun watching him run off screens.
Yeah, there's another play they run for him which they've been running for him all season and getting him open looks all season that he hadn't knocked down to tonight, where he kind of comes up from the elbow, sets a screen for Towns or for Nas, who he kind of screens them open so they can go screen on the ball. And then Beasley, after he sets that screen, kind of floats into the paint and then jets back out into the corner and gets an exit screen coming out. It's like a cross screen into an exit screen. And it's just a beautiful action, man. And again, tonight, same thing. I think he one of those, hit two off those, staggered staggers, and then hit a couple where he just kind of gets a quick off-ball cross screen and can just jet up into the slot and hit a shot. That's the thing with him, is I don't think he's been playing awfully. I think he's just been not hitting shots. And I've always been pretty confident that those shots were going to fall because he doesn't do much else if he's not hitting shots, offensively at least. But I've been really impressed with his defensive buy-in as well.
Yeah.
Like, I think it shows that he was in that system in Denver. And he seems more comfortable with it. And he still makes mistakes. He closes out terribly. He's got horrible closeout technique. But like, he's trying really hard, and he's really doing things that the scheme dictates that he does. I've been super impressed with Malik kind of all season, while also acknowledging that he's on the surface been pretty bad most games, if that makes sense.
I think he's been bad because his shots haven't been falling, and I think part of that is just trying to adjust to a role that he probably didn't expect to have, you know, a few months ago. And I've been so impressed with his defense and his weak side, his ability and commitment to playing that low man role where he's tagging the lane and running, recovering to guys in the corner. And he's not good at closing out, but he's running those guys off the 3-point line.
Yeah.
And he's forced like 4 or 5 turnovers with guys stepping as they try and drive past him, but either they travel or step out of bounds.
There's just so much more wiggle room to be a bad closeout guy in this system.
Yeah.
Because if you can just run them off the line, exactly. You have the paint is packed with defenders. Yeah, yeah. Whereas in the drop coverage, it was just really obvious that like if you run someone off the line, now they're just going downhill at just Towns. And that just creates more problems for the team and creates more problems for Cat, who wasn't able to deal with that downhill force to begin with. And now it's kind of like, well, there's 2 or 3 guys in the paint already. When it gets skipped to the weak side, if he can just run them off the line, kind of the other side of the court now becomes the low man. And now you have like an Anthony Edwards or a Jaden McDaniels who can rotate from that side. So as much as I still think he needs a heap of work on his closeout technique to become a guy who can just stop you from running off the line almost and just get in front of someone and kind of stop the play, slow the ball down. He's got much more insulation this season to be a bad closeout guy.
His buy-in to that role is so important for this team going forward, because if he reverts to that unorganized chaos that we saw last year, where the energy's there, but it's detrimental to the scheme because he's just flying all over the place and not really accomplishing anything. And that's what I worried about before tonight, where they were essentially just asking him, hey, for 15 minutes, go stand in the corner and try and knock down threes when they get kicked to you. But if you're actually continuously running him off screens or running four or five sets for him a night, I think that really helps encourage him to continue to buy into that defensive discipline. And he's even shown an improved feel or basketball IQ on the offensive end too, where once he comes off that screen, he's not just immediately chucking regardless of where his defender is. He's either making the extra pass or trying to drive and dump. And it's been really, really impressive. Towards the end of this game, he came off a pin down screen towards the top of the key. The defense kind of collapsed on him, and he just kicked it back to the left wing, and D'Lo knocked down that open three. And I would be shocked if he would have done that last season.
And that's coming, and that's when he's got 6 threes in his pocket.
Right.
Like he probably had the lenience from the coaching staff to fire that because he'd been hitting it, but he makes the right play anyway. And I think they're making the right play as a team a lot. I just think that sometimes the shots aren't going in, and it seems to be like everyone's in like a mini slump or in a roller coaster type season right now. And it's tough to watch, but it's encouraging because I don't think that'll continue. And especially with Malik, I would be shocked now if he goes back to shooting 1 of 5 for the next 5 games. He seems like Edwards and Russell are kind of the same, where I think that they can go on 10 game stretches of being really hot. And in a game, all three of those guys, which is both encouraging and concerning, that all three really need to see one shot go through before, and then they can hit 5, 6, 7 threes. Like, but then there's the games that they don't go in. And tonight was one of those ones. D'Lo couldn't hit a shot early. Ant missed a bunch of layups that he'd normally hit. Cat's kind of different to that. I think Cat can just hit shots all game. Cat can miss five shots and then hit five straight after it, or he can, you know, miss one, hit one all game. I don't think he really gets in his own head about hitting shots because he knows that he will. But D'Lo, Ant, and Beasley all, I think, need to hit their first one of their first three shots, or it's going to be a bad night. And that's concerning, but also if they all hit their shots, you're probably going to run teams out the gym with just those four.
Yeah, and it's been so frustrating, and that hitting that first shot, I think, is an important note, and we didn't see that from Russell tonight, where his first shot looked like it was 90% of the way down, and decided to hop right back out, which unfortunately has been a common theme.
I think he ends up hitting like 5 of 7, maybe, if I'm trying to read that correctly, in the second half, because I think he started 1 of 7, finishes 6 of 14, 6 of 15, sorry, so 5 of 8. And like, that's the problem, is that in that first half, it can change so much between hitting one shot and missing one shot. And Ant is the same. Ant even more sometimes. I always feel like when Ant hits a three, like, he might score 15 straight now, even if he's having a bad night. And tonight he couldn't hit a three at all. He's been pretty
close.
Yeah, he's been pretty poor shooting all season. Like, we'll finish on Ant, I guess, a little bit before we get out of here, but it's been strange. I wrote about it. I wrote about his leadership today. Shameless plug, head over to howsandgrouse.substack.com, sign up. But until this game, I haven't felt his shooting as much as a detriment to the team. I've always felt like even when he shot 8 of 23, he's had moments in the game where he was the best player. He's had moments in the game where he was the leader on the floor, where you don't want to give Anthony Edwards a minute of space because he'll win you the game if you do, or he'll lose you the game if you're the opposition. Tonight just didn't feel that way, and it culminated with that layup attempt at the end of the game, which was just so disjointed. And I don't know, I haven't watched the replay, but I don't know if he got hit from behind by Jokic. I don't know if he just straight short-armed it. Like,
he just got caught directly under the rim and tried to
use his left. And they're a hard shot, man. I miss a lot of those shots in pickup. It's the easiest shot, and when you've got no momentum and you just kind of got to get it off quick.
And you have this bear breathing down your neck on your right shoulder. And
fucking rumbling down the court. Right. Yeah, and when you've missed 7 layups for the night and you've got no confidence, like, it all just culminated in that, and that's it was just a tough night for Ant. And I hope, using that same point, I hope that this isn't something that carries over into the next game. I don't really worry about it because Ant is such a kind of carefree dude where it's like, and confident. I just feel like he knows that next game he can score 30. But yeah, it's a tough night for Ant, man.
And I think I think these bad shooting nights are going to be more common than they aren't, because I'm still not convinced that he's going to be this awesome 3-point shooter, despite what he says. And I believe he's putting in the work and all that stuff. I just don't think his shot is at that level yet. But his whole impact comes from using that physicality and that force getting downhill, and he just didn't do that tonight. And the way we've seen him grow into this really dynamic pick and roll operator, and there was very little of that tonight. The way he, early in the first quarter, he had that really nice baseline drive where he planted his foot, relocated essentially back into the middle of the lane, dropped in a floater, and he essentially changed his positioning by 5 or 6 feet because he got downhill. He used that change of pace and change of direction. That was really the only time I can remember that he did that this game. He had a couple of really nice layups where he finished through contact, but he missed a bunch. His hands weren't great on cuts, and I can't, off the top of my head, remember a bunch of pick and rolls with Cat where he got his defender on his hip, leaned into him, bounced off into space and dumped it back off to Cat or pulled up for that 10-footer. And we just didn't see him really look to penetrate the defense. And he just settled a lot and tossed up a bunch of layups that seemed kind of half-hearted.
Yeah, they were layups that made you say, man, Ant should have hit that, but also layups that looked like they just really... he didn't will them in as much as they didn't go in, and I thought Denver defended really well tonight. I think there were, as much as the Timberwolves missed shots, and you know, the people on the Denver Paint Points podcast is probably saying the same thing about Minnesota right now, that you know, they defended really well, and that's why they won. And I thought they did. I thought they guarded Cat really well. I thought they packed the paint on Ant really well, which seems to be the book right now, is that pack the paint, let him shoot.
He has to figure out going forward, because he is effective running that pick and roll when his defender does go over. And when he's not hitting these shots like he was tonight, 0 for 6, I believe, from 3, then it makes the defender's life so much easier because they can go under and completely take away that driving lane. So I don't think he needs to be this prolific shooter, but if he can hit or just get downhill early. And
he gets into prove it mode.
Hesitant so far, yeah.
He gets into like, well, like if you want to go under, I'm going to hit threes because I know I can hit threes. And he'll keep shooting. And I get what he says. I think he had that quote the other day where it was kind of like, well, like I need to shoot to get guys to come out so I can drive.
Mm-hmm.
I've always and he's right, but like I want to see him drive. Right. And then get guys to come out and try and stop you from driving. Like,
yeah.
Once it, you know, use the inside game to get your outside game going rather than vice versa.
Yep. And totally agree.
And he does get into prove it mode where it's like, I'm going to hit a three soon. I'm 0-5, but like, I can shoot, so I'm going to keep shooting. And it's not a bad mentality, but nights like this, it doesn't feel good.
And that mentality will win them a handful of games this season, because he will get hot. He will go 7 of 10 from 3,
and he's the only one who has that incredible mentality on the team. Where it's like, I will this team to a win because I'm good enough to do it.
We saw in the third quarter of that Pelicans game, where he just went nuclear,
and we saw it at the end of the Bucks game where it's like, I haven't shot well tonight, but like, I trust that I'm going to make a play now. And that's why I consider him the kind of spiritual leader of this team, whereas Towns is clearly the best player on the team. And I think that both of those guys have accepted and kind of embraced that role. I am still unsure where D'Lo fits into all of that, but I think it can work. I don't know. I'm stuck between... There's issues that aren't just aberrations in the half court and the scoring package in general of all three of those guys, and then also thinking, like, they're also too good to score 14 points a night and shoot 16 of 45 combined. Like, all you need is another 5 buckets from them and you win this game. If you can hold out being literally the top 5 defense and even let that drop to 15th in defense, I still think you're going to win more games than you lose. But you can't let this become like a month-long trend of the half-court offense just being completely stuck in the mud.
I think that makes a lot of sense. And coming into the season, none of us thought that these offensive and defensive ratings were going to look the way they're currently looking. So,
yeah. I can't believe it. I can't believe we're having this conversation about how the Timberwolves' offense stinks and their defense is so good.
Right, and they've struggled. They've struggled so far this season offensively, but there's just too much damn offensive talent on this team.
And we saw it last season. I know we only saw 20-odd games of all three, but like, they were awesome offensively in those 20 games. It's not like we've never seen this version of the Wolves before and it can't work. Like, Malik Beasley wasn't there, but he doesn't matter in terms of the half-court offense when he's not even on the court. Like, they will figure something out, even if it's not top 10 like we thought it might be. Like, if it's... But maybe the defense is better. Like, they're not going to be the worst half-court offense in the league.
No. And So I have a lot of confidence that they're going to keep getting better offensively. And if they can keep this defensive rating or this defensive effort and commitment throughout the season, that's what I'm more fascinated by, because I really think that the offensive woes are just slight miscommunications, guys trying to overemphasize a role they feel like they should be playing by trying to make too many plays instead of just making the easy play, and shots just not falling. They're going to fall. There's too much offensive talent on this team for them to not be a good, like, at least above average offense. And if they can keep that defensive commitment, that's what I really want to see, because it wouldn't surprise me if Ant's commitment to making those weak side tags falls off, if Beasley becomes more erratic with his defensive impact, if D'Angelo Russell becomes or starts dying on every screen again and doesn't really fight over. So if that stuff continues once we get to the game 20 and 30, then I'll be a lot more bought in that this defense is legitimate, and mm-hmm. I'm really excited about it right now, because it has been something that I don't think anyone would have bet on or expected coming into the season.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. At the end of the day, the caveat to all of this is that it's been 5 games, and yeah. I'm never going to make a sweeping declaration of 5 games, but right now it's just like upside down, topsy turvy Timberwolves, and I don't know what to make of it. But I do know that they seem like they. I can't imagine them being blown out at the moment. Like, I don't know what team's going to blow them out, because they seem to be playing so well defensively. Like, tonight is a game where they would get blown out last season because the offense didn't work, and when the offense doesn't work, they lose by 30. They've got out of this Denver-Milwaukee duo of games 1-1. I think we all would have taken that before. I wouldn't have expected it to unfurl the way that it did. But I would say overall I'm pretty happy with the team, although tonight was the most frustrating loss. I forget how frustrated I get in the early season, because the team's not already out of the playoff race. Well, when there's a chance to actually be decent, losses are so much more frustrating. That Jimmy Butler season, I was annoyed for 80 games straight. I hate having expectations.
It's an unnatural feeling. We're not supposed to have them, but the bar's too low for that usually. The 3-2 record right now feels disappointing, because they very easily could and maybe should be 5-0,
right?
And which is absurd to think about, because coming into the season, I didn't expect them to win either this game or the Bucks game.
Mm-hmm.
But last year's team, or the teams of the past couple of years, they would have blown that Milwaukee game at the end. They would have given up the 15-point lead tonight and lost by 20. They would have, they would have split with New Orleans, which that's unfortunate, but. It just feels different.
It feels different.
Great,
and that's
great
the
analysis there, but
it's the
does.
Perfect way to put it, though. It just feels different. I'm not sure what the difference is. I'm not sure how tangible the difference is going to be in 40 games, but it feels different in a way that is hard to put your finger on right now. They got Orlando next, which is a nice little softball. They need to treat. They can't treat it like a softball, because this. I did tweet this out, that this is a game that I've watched before where they lose a heartbreaker when they're in a good moment, and
almost like things against Orlando last season.
Yeah, and things just unravel. Against OKC, you know, a couple of years ago, the Jersey Tuck game, like this can't be a moment that we look back on in 6 months and say, if they had have maybe beaten Denver, they could have kept that run going for an extra 10 games. Like, they can't disappear. They cannot lose to Orlando, because all the good vibes will just dissipate if they lose to Orlando. Especially if it's a game where Orlando put up like 130. you know, if it's a bad defensive performance. I just feel like I can feel a Cole Anthony 35-point game. A Jalen Suggs Minnesota revenge tour.
Yeah, dude, Suggs finally has a good offensive game.
Yeah. But that's just I think that's just the years of pain talking.
Those are our expectations. I mean, that's where we feel comfortable.
Yeah. We shall see. In the end, just looking back on that game, it's going to be one that frustrates me for a while, but it's also not one where I think the bottom has fallen out of the team.
No.
It's just a few issues that kind of come back to bottom on the ass tonight. So, we move on, and hopefully this isn't something that we look back on in months as a turning point.
I don't think it'll be a turning point. Next game could be.
Losing to Denver isn't a crisis point. Denver, a good team, and they've been good without Murray.
God, yeah.
I think when you look at it from a big picture lens, is that. Yeah, Denver, a good team. I expected them to beat Minnesota tonight. I'm frustrated at the way the game panned out, but that's what good teams do, like Denver. They win those games, and they've been winning those games for 4 or 5 years, and I'm not super disappointed, although, yeah, I can firmly say that there was some profanity in the household tonight. I don't think my girlfriend's overly happy with me, but... hopefully we can turn that around against Orlando. Tyler Metcalf.
I think we will.
Yeah. Tyler Metcalf, Kanus Hoopus, no ceilings. Go check out No Ceilings. Subscribe to the Substack. I'm just pushing Substacks everywhere on this podcast. Mine, Tyler's, House and Drow's. It's free. It's free. Like, and you know, getting stuff just sent straight to your email. You don't have to go onto a website. Just look in your emails in the morning. Pretend while you're at work, pretending to read work emails. Just read about basketball. It's awesome. And obviously, Kanus Hoopus, the great folks, our friends at Kanus Hoopus. Thanks for coming on, man.
My pleasure, man. Thanks for having me.
No worries. And everyone else, I will see you next week. I know I was a bit late this way. I didn't do one last week. Life got in the way, but I will be back to weekly pods after this, and yeah, I'll see you then.